everybody, and welcome to the Caffeination 236. This is 236 episodes in the can, or at least going in there. Hi, everybody. How's it going? This is the day before Memorial Day, so it's a fantastic day here at the Caffeination Podcast. This is the long weekend for everybody listening in the States, so hopefully everybody's out there enjoying it, getting all the interesting stuff done that everybody seems to be doing. There's all kinds of crazy sales going on right now for all the weekend warriors trying to do their little part to increase the worth of their domiciles and whatnot. That's what we've been doing around here in the Caffeination Lair. It's been quite busy, a lot of stuff going on, so I'm going a little buggy, which is why this is the Caffeination Going Buggy edition here. I've been playing around in the yard. If you follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/caffeination, you know that. And there's bugs all over the place out there, so I don't usually worry about that. I don't mind that kind of stuff. But when I came in here, there was all kinds of news about different insects and bugs and everything. So a little bit of confluence, a little bit of everything running together there. So decided to name this the Buggy Edition. Hopefully everything will be nice and smoothed out, because I named one of the episodes Mischief at one point, and everything started going to heck in a handbasket. So it's like, you know what? Hopefully the Buggy Edition will just stay a little bit quirky. Not necessarily buggy per se, but hopefully you'll like what we got going for you today. This is the Caffeination Podcast. We are the high-octane world of caffeine culture and technology news. And just in case you were wondering, you can find this and all the other episodes over at www.caffeination.com. That's, coincidentally enough, the Caffeination homepage, caffeination.com. We are a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. We're also a proud member of the Blueberry Podcast Network, and we are proud to be a Puzzle Piece production. So it's a whole bunch of stuff that we got going for you today on today's show. You're going to hear about any and all the following topics. You're going to hear about robots, insects, greenhouses, inventions, coffee, green tea, and peppermint. So it's a well-rounded show, I'd like to say. A little bit of an opinion floating around, so just let me know how you feel about this. Let me know how you feel about the different ways the shows are created. I love getting feedback. Caffeination@gmail.com for all your comments, feedback, suggestion, hate mail, whatever else you'd like to throw my general direction. I'm glad to see it, glad to hear it, glad to have it. Whole nine yards. So, like I said, it's a great episode. We have Real News Bites, Tech Cruft, and Caffeine and Food. The three hallmarks, the three little sections that everything kind of falls into. So hopefully, hopefully we can get through this in moderate time, because I got to tell you, I'm somebody who tends to drone on about certain topics, and every once in a while I get so excited that I end up talking well past the time that I should. We're still well under the time I'm allowed to babble at the beginning of the show here, but last time it took me something like an hour and a half to edit it down, and I know I left some interesting stuff on the cutting room floor, but you know, I feel that the episodes are a little bit tighter, a little bit more managed when I actually spend that extra time, so hopefully I'll kind of keep it in and under the radar here. All right, first up here in Real News Bites, we like it. I've only gotten to play with the Wii Fit a couple times. I gotta tell you, it's really, really fun. It's really interesting, and it's interesting to see exactly how much information the Wii Fit can actually get. And I'm almost ready to write a full review. I've only used it for 2 days so far. So today would be the third if I can actually get upstairs and do it after the episode's over. But one thing I'm just going to put out there in case anybody has a Wii Fit. It comes with these four little extensions. So if you don't put the extensions on in the bottom of the Wii Fit, is actually touching your carpet, it will show you the incorrect weight. Because I thought I lost a decent amount of weight in between yesterday and today, and yeah, it not so much. It just was set off kilter by the fact that we took the extensions off. So just a little word to the wise for everybody out there. The article, like I said, is in the works, so you're going to get to find out about exactly what I think of it and the different things that I think they could have done better or need to do in the future. We'll see. It's a really interesting piece of hardware. It's very, very sensitive. It knows exactly where you are, and apparently I have very good balance, and my wife apparently leans on, I think it's the right leg she leans more on. So it's kind of strange to see that it knows that tiny little thing. I mean, it's really, really, really accurate. So, like I said, article's coming up. Don't need to worry about it too much time. All right, now the first real thing we have here in the Real News Bites section is something that I hadn't thought about very much. It's how do people who are blind tell time? And up until this point, the only thing that's really been available is speaking watches. Basically, you have a watch, you hit a button, and it tells you what time it is. So not only is that slightly intrusive, that other people know that you're trying to check what time it is, so you can't just do the surreptitious little glance down at your watch or anything like that to try and check the time or anything. But it's kind of a kludge. At least that's how I'm seeing it. I think it's more of a brute force approach to the problem. There's no elegance associated with it, and there's no personal touch. And that brings me to this little gadget that I've seen floating around on Device. This is a rotating, this is a completely mechanized Braille watch. So all somebody would have to do is run their finger over it, and if they knew Braille, they'd be able to tell what time it is. And it does this through rotating dimples on metallic little spheres. So it works exactly the same way that a normal watch does. And I'm looking at this and going, this is one of those smack yourself in the center of the forehead kind of things. Why has no one thought of this to this point? I mean, this isn't even, Braille dots scrolling down, although I think that would be possible to do. You know, like the same way the old school alarm clocks would have the hour hand or the hour dial and, you know, all the other dials for the numbers, and you just have them scrolling past. This looks like it takes up even smaller of a piece, and somehow, like, I don't know exactly how Braille works. I don't know the way in which things have to be organized in order to be one versus two or whatever. So this is a really, really interesting idea, and I wonder exactly how accurate it's going to be. The only thing is, there's no way to make it at this point. This is only a concept art piece. I got to tell you, if there's ever anything that I think needs to be made, this is one of those gadgets that I really, really, really hope actually makes it through to production. Next little thing we have up here in Real News Bites is something of a blast back in time. If you've been doing HTML work, or if you've been working on websites or anything since, like, I'd say the mid-90s or anywhere past that, probably around 97 is when it really came out into its own, there was a website called WebMonkey that I remember using a lot when I was not necessarily new to HTML, but as I was trying to increase my skill set, I remember referencing WebMonkey and remember showing people WebMonkey as a great place to get more information. Well, apparently they've just had a relaunch, so they're going through the 2.0 beta thing. Of course they have a 2.0 on there, and of course they have the word beta in there. So I just think it's kind of fun, but I want to kind of, since they're doing this whole reintroduction thing, I wanted to kind of pass the thing along. So in case there's any people out there who are like me and have been doing web designer for a little while, and you might want to get back in there and get a refresher, then you can head on over there. They do have, I haven't really seen what's in this thing yet, but they have a downloadable cheat sheet. So just in case you wanted to brush up on some skills, they have a whole bunch of code libraries, reference articles, and a whole bunch of other stuff. They have the complete WebSafe color chart. I mean, it's a very useful resource. And one of the things that we're going to try and do here at the Caffeination, we're going to try and start highlighting different resource websites that I see. And we're going to put them in Real News Bites. And basically, it's just not necessarily the link of the day or anything like that, but it's something that, as a geek or as a computer aficionado, that I think you would really enjoy. So if you are a coder, or if you'd like to try and try your hand at a little hand-coded HTML, I mean, after all, if it's good enough for the New York Times homepage, it's good enough for whatever you'd like to put up online. So you can head on over to webmonkey.com. Then the last little thing we have in the Real News Bites section is this interesting little invention called the Telectroscope. And if you'd like to find out more about this thing, you can head on over to the website where it's hosted, which is www.tiscali.co.uk, and you can find the link there for the Telectroscope. Now, the idea behind this is that there was, around 100 years ago, there was a engineering diagram put forth and an idea put forth to connect New York and London through a giant underground telescope of sorts. And the idea was that on one end there'd be a series of mirrors, and on the other end there'd be a series of mirrors and lenses and everything, so that somebody standing in New York and somebody standing in London would be able to see people, you know, in real time. So you'd be able to see exactly what was going on. And unfortunately, due to certain things, at least this is the story that's going up on the website, due to certain problems, the project was never completed. Apparently there was supposed to be some island in the middle of the ocean where they dug down and started the tunnel. Now, at this point, I don't know And this thing's actually been built. That's the cool part about it. This thing has actually been built. There are two ends to this. It looks very steampunk, looks very awesome, very Victorian era. One is in New York, obviously. One is in London. And what the reality of it is there are these giant art installations, which are currently operating from May 22nd to the 15th of June in both London and New York. So if you'd like to find out more and you're going to be in the area of one of those two things, you need to head on over to this website and check it out. Some of this is tongue-in-cheek. Some of this is story in support of the actual item itself, which is cool enough. And I wonder if there ever actually was a plan to try and connect the two cities via tunnel. And even if it's the smallest little tunnel, because that's a very Jules Verne, Victorian era kind of misunderstanding of how things work, and at the same point in time, the dare to dream mentality. So it's really kind of awesome to see this. And even if you believe the mythology, rather, it's really kind of eye opening to see how well it was executed in this particular instance. And the real way that it was done is there's two art installations, one in New York, one in London, and they're actually connected through high speed internet connections and webcams. That's the boring explanation. But when you look at it, it's almost easy to see that this might have worked. You know, just maybe. Put aside plate tectonics, put aside the massive pressures of the ocean, put aside all the niggles that you might have with any piece of it, with any of the actual science. A setup like this. All right, first up in TechCruft, from over at Boing Boing, they have a fantastic bedroom that was painted painstakingly, as they say, with the Bubble Man stage from Mega Man 2. The person said that it took them 3 months to complete. It's unbelievable the amount of detail that an 8-bit system was able to convey. And for some reason, I don't know if it's a little bit of nostalgia, but there is a large piece of value placed on a lot of the earlier video games, specifically some of the iconic video games, such as Mario Brothers, Legend of Zelda, and a lot of the really early Nintendo games, such as Mega Man and stuff, have this cult following. I'm pretty sure it's because most of the people who are at least around my age grew up playing them. And there was a really interesting article that I can't find at this point in time, which directly related Miyamoto, the gentleman who basically designed the Famicom / NES and designed most of the video games that came out for the original Nintendo, Mario Brothers, Zelda, and like so many of the other really seminal works of Nintendo. He designed all these, and they're comparing his work to Disney, Walt Disney, and they're saying that this is the golden age of video games, and they go through his entire career, which is at this point has spanned over 30 years of video game and console design. And I'm probably missing a lot more of his earlier work, but they're saying this man is to video gaming what Walt Disney was to animation and film. So it's really kind of interesting to look at it in that light, because these people are kind of the Walt Disney at that point in time and Miyamoto now are kind of these guiding lights in very inventive spaces. So in order to stand above, it's not just like, hey, you know what, I created a fantastic game and this is awesome. It's not just like creating Halo, which the guys over at Bungie did, which is fantastic. It's a great game. They've already done two sequels to it. That's awesome. But what else have you done? Yes, they've created other smaller, lesser-known games, but most of them in the same kind of genre, most of them in the same kind of bend on how to do it. And yes, Miyamoto's games could almost be wrapped into one umbrella or wrapped under one umbrella or something like that, but the only thing that you can really use to describe all of them, the only thing you can really use to describe everything he's done, which includes the Wii Fit, is that they all have some sort of bit of his essence in it. It's something where he manages, through whatever he's created, to kind of reach into the human psyche and pull out something that's just inherently fun and inherently likable about it. So it's just really kind of cool, and if I can find that article, I will definitely place it up in the show notes, because as I'm sitting here right now, I don't have it, but hopefully you will be able to click on through over at caffeination.com after I can find it. All that just from a Mega Man room. Imagine that. Alright, up next we have a fun little article on how the Beatles saved 3D optical computing. Now, we're not talking about John Paul, George, and Ringo. No, not the fine lads from Liverpool. What we're talking about here is a Brazilian beetle, which has a very unique shell structure. In fact, this is one of the few items on the planet which is iridescent at no matter what angle you look at it. Usually if something's iridescent, like the feathers on a pigeon's neck or a mallard's head or something like that, they're iridescent. They're that bright green from only one directional angle. And this beetle has a very interesting shell structure in that the atoms are organized in the exact same pattern as they are in a diamond, but in layer form. Rather than the diamond using its shape and using the way it refracts light as an entirety, they are actually layered into the actual shell. Now, how is this important, and why does this have anything to do with 3D optical computing? Well, that's supposed to be the next step in how computers are designed. Everybody's trying to break away from silicon, they're trying to break away from electricity, and they're trying to use light, so photons. So instead of electrons, they're trying to use photons. And the way that you would do this in most environments is that it needs to be a 3D structure, and they need to be able to have certain levels of transparency and not have bleed through on the different levels. I don't understand the entirety of how this is supposed to work, but basically chip designers they've required crystals that can channel photons as nimbly as silicons channel electrons. That's basically a little quote out of Wired. And they've been baffled up to this point. This has been like 20 years or something like that. They've been trying to work on some kind of chip structure that would allow them to do this, and they have never been able to find it. Up until somebody was actually using the electron microscope to examine this particular beetle's shell, and they said, you know what? The exact same organization of molecules and patterns and everything in the shell structure of this beetle is exactly the same as is in a diamond, and is exactly the same as we need to actually proceed with this chip. So it's yet another one of those examples of nature kind of perfecting things and humans just noticing it at a certain point in time. So if you'd like to find out more about it, you can head on over to Wired to check out the article. But the scales of this beetle have really, really interesting implications beyond that. So it's kind of awesome to see this kind of thing, you know, take shape just in front of your eyes. I mean, Just imagine that something that's crawling around on the floor through the dung and whatever you have of the jungle floor is managing to make supercomputers in a couple years, possibly. That's just the first little instance of bug-related items. The second thing that I saw that was very bug-related was from over at Trend Hunter. This is insect-inspired fashion. This just proves, Mario Schwab's Beetle Couture has just proved to me that people have officially run out of ideas. They don't know what it is to design anymore. They definitely don't have any new ideas for movies, because everything's a remake at this point. But I gotta tell you, it's really kind of crazy. And this, I usually don't dip into fashion. I usually don't dip into the stuff that I see online. But this kind of spoke to the way the episode was going, so I want to just kind of put it up there. It's kind of interesting that the fact that they actually took the markings and stuff and the coloration and the texturation of certain beetles and insects in general, and they kind of mapped them onto fashion models. So it's just really kind of weird, and you can head on over there and check that out if it's your thing. Then the last little bug-related tidbit that we found here was something about a jumping robot. Apparently somebody has created a grasshopper-like robot that, even though it is only 7 grams, it is incredibly tiny. This thing, it can jump 1.4 meters. This thing can leap 27 times its actual body size. So they say this is 10 times further than its size and weight for anybody else who's making a jumping robot. Now, I don't know about you, and I don't know about anything that anybody else I've seen making jumping robots, but they're saying they're going to be able to affix certain kinds of solar cells, so this thing will be able to maneuver on its own past that, and that it allows for certain mobility that other robots, traditional wheeled and tracked robots, don't have. So a lot of robots recently have been kind of coming out with this very insect-like structure to them, and it's just one more of those little design confluences that I really find interesting. You see, nature has perfected things, and we're just trying to catch up. I mean, at one point in time, very early in the 1900s, people didn't know how to fly. They didn't know how to make an airplane, and it was only through examining existing pieces of nature. So it just proves that human intelligence doesn't really exist in a vacuum. It more along the lines of exists in things that we just haven't noticed yet. So I just wanted to kind of pass this along as something awesome. They're basically saying that this might eventually be used for search and rescue, so these little jumping robots would be able to enter in broken down buildings or chemical spills and find people, find things through the ability to hop from place to place or maneuver in places where other robots, heavier robots, wouldn't be able to. And speaking of things that you might not be able to maneuver, I've decided that my personal vehicle, I think it's a 10-speed bike. No, a 21-speed. I don't know. It's a mountain bike. I haven't used most of the other gears because it's sort of stuck within a certain thing at this point. But it's very manual. It's very, very pedestrian, even for a bike. What do you need? I need a jet bike. That's right. I need a pulse jet-powered bicycle. There's an article up on a website called Autoblog Green that shows you a very traditional-looking mountain bike with what looks like a giant penlight attached to it. It looks like a giant little flashlight. And what it actually is a World War II-era power plant, a World War II-era jet engine capable of producing somewhere around the 60 foot-pounds of torque, of power. So this thing is insane. I don't know how you would go about using this. I don't know what kind of shielding you would need to actually drive this thing around. And the fact that it's only on one side of the bike kind of leads me to believe that it's going to be a little bit unbalanced on one side. But then again, I don't think I would want two jet engines on my bike. And the other thing that I'm kind of looking at this as it's awesome because somebody strapped a jet engine to a bike, but it's also a little bit impractical because at the back end of it, where, you know, there's going to be a lot of heat coming out the back end of the turbine, you're right next to the rubber tire. So I'm pretty sure unless you're going pretty quick, it's actually going to heat up the rubber tire significantly, and I think you might have a little bit of a problem there. But I just wanted to kind of pass it along as one of those weird little fun things that I find online. That's what the TechCraft thing usually is. It's not usually heavy or anything like that. So right now, there's not something I talk about a lot, but there's a huge budget crisis in most households out there. Unless you are completely car independent, you are being hit hard by the gas prices that are out there right now. And I'm not going to say anything on it one way or another. The only thing I'm going to say is if you are currently in dire straits, this thing probably isn't the projector for you. I'm talking a little bit about the conspicuous consumption that I've seen recently and some of the planned opulence that is out there. It's people buying things just because they're expensive or buying things just because they're fantastically extravagant is noticeably reducing. The frequency of this is being noticeably reduced of late. So it's really interesting when you see something like this come down the pike, and I usually don't report on this style of thing, but there is a projector out there. It's called the Sim2 Grand Cinema HT3000. And yeah, all that gives you an insane amount of stuff. Now, I'm not going to go into all the different color processing or signal strength or the fact that there's six little HDMI inputs, because all that doesn't mean anything. This is a home theater projector. You heard what I said, home theater, at $21,595, plus whatever lens you decide to choose. I'm sorry, $21,000, this thing needs to drive to my office, pick me up, bring me home, make popcorn, actually get movies from the store, paying for them, of course, sit me down in a nice big cushy chair, which it has purchased, and then play the movie. That it needs to do all of that. There is no way that I can imagine anyone actually spending $21,000 on a projector. So, and because it was out there and because it was just one of those things that struck me so unbelievably hard, I just had to kind of pass it along. Hopefully, you, if you have that money, that you're going to share the wealth, and if not, that you join the rest of the club. All right, now the next thing we have out here is somewhat of a lesser scale, but there's people all over the country right now. There's people all over the world who have their own tiny little vegetable gardens, and some people are very jealous of this. People who live in apartments, people who live in very urban centers don't necessarily have the ability to grow things because, you know, they can't have window boxes, there's not enough available space, or, you know, there's just not enough sunlight or heat to actually grow the type of plants they want. Well, in steps the portable greenhouse. This is a folding greenhouse that is specifically designed for city dwellers, supposedly. So this is a tiny little plastic enclosure that allows you, I don't know if it's completely and fully enclosed, because they show you somebody with a pile of soil on their deck and then this thing laying over it. No word yet on the actual price of this, but I love the idea. This is one of those things where I could have seen, you know, when we lived in the apartment, I would have put like some kind of trough out there and I would have, you know, grown things in this. This is a really cool idea, and I hope that if it isn't being made right now, that it actually does enter into production, because it's one of those things where you'd be able to sell. I mean, there's a lot of ecology-minded people out there right now. It's very in the now. So this is the kind of product that I could see, even if it was somewhere around the $50 price point, I could see it really selling well. Anything more than that, I don't know if, you know, people are going to pay for it. But then again, you know, people are paying for a lot of strange stuff of late. So I just wanted to kind of put it out there as a really fun and interesting little design piece. And speaking of fun and interesting design pieces, there is a blog out there called The Nonist, and they've taken a series of different Japanese-designed projects that are kind of failed inventions. That's what they're basically saying. Things along the line of a personal rain saver, a way for you, through an upturned umbrella and a carrying case on one arm, to actually collect the rain that's supposed to be falling on you and store it in some sort of bag. And the reason that I actually ended up going to this is the 10-in-1 gardening tool. This is actually a Swiss Army knife of gardening tools, and I think I might have talked about this one in the past, but I just wanted to kind of put it out there as a fun little jaunt through some of the more interesting pieces of design out there. For instance, they have vertigo soothing goggles, which are these tiny, or these giant tin cans over each one of the person's eyes that has an actual a layer of soil, rather, that's kind of right below the eye line, I guess to give somebody kind of a steadier perspective. I don't know how that would actually work. And then the only thing that I see on this entire page, out of all the really strange and interesting design pieces, that is actually very useful, is a portable office tie. This is a perfectly normal looking tie on the one side, except for the fact that I think it's a clip-on, and I think that's a bad choice. It's a perfectly normal looking tie. However, when you look on the back of it, it has all sorts of tiny little pockets. So there's scissors, there's paper clips, there's a business card holder, there's an ID badge, there's a pen holder, all these in the two little sections of the tie, you know, both in the fat one in the front and the skinny one in the back. And this is the kind of thing that I really could get into. I mean, yeah, it might add a little bit of front side weight on the chest, but I really think this is a useful gadget, and I think that somebody actually should kind of make that. You know, despite the fact that they have things like the hay fever hat, which is actually just a glorified toilet paper roll on top of somebody's head that allows them to blow their nose continuously. So, just one of those fun things that I thought I'd pass it along. And that about wraps up the Tech Cruft section here. We have a couple little caffeine and food things, then we will send you on your way. And, so it's been really hard, and I think I've finally pinpointed after 2.5 years of doing this podcast. During the summer months, there is very little news about coffee or tea. Most caffeinated beverages and everything really kind of hit their peak in the mid autumn and the dead of winter. That's when most people are talking about. I guess because they're hot drinks, mostly uniformly, they're hot drinks, so that's what people kind of focus in on. And there's just kind of like a glut of news at that point, and there's like a drought of news in the early summer and the dead of summer. Late spring and dead of summer. There's almost nothing to talk about. It's kind of irritating. So, you know, I apologize right now, because I don't want to keep going over old topics. So I just wanted to say that right up front. And, this kind of spans both sections, both the Tech Cruft and not. It's made it into the caffeine and food because it is a Coke machine. But apparently there were actual tiny little desktop robots that you could have that looked like giant Coke machines. And they, you know, they had the flexible arms. They looked kind of like a cross between any one of a number of different 60s era robots. We're all about robots, and our shiny metal overlords will hopefully appreciate that in the long run. But this is taking it a step further than I ever thought was possible. But apparently in Japan right now, and specifically in Tokyo, they're walking robots going around, and there's some differing opinions based on whatever blog you look at, that they will actually walk up to other soda machines and place themselves in front of them, or they will chide you based on your a choice of another soda, and you can still actually use them the same way that you would any other soda machine and actually dispense a frosty beverage. So I just wanted to pass it along because, first of all, they're robots, and second of all, they're a way to get caffeine in your system. But I actually really like the black one they have here, so it's a kind of like a cross between Transformers, a soda machine, and some kind of strange robot from the middle of the 60s. So There you go. And then up here, I apologize ahead of time, but avast ye scurvy dog, there be meat that needs running through. Yes, if you head on over to theplunderguide.com, you too can get your very own barbecue sword. Yes, it's a standard little two-pronged fork. However, it has an elongated handle, a pommel, and a hilt guard, which is always very useful in case you decide to spar through the latter half of your Memorial Day cooking season. But the only thing that I really don't like about this little package that they have here, yeah, I like the idea and the playfulness. In fact, my father actually bought me a set of grill tools that all have Craftsman handles, so they all look like screwdrivers on the back end, and they have fully functional grill tools on the front. They're really awesome. But it goes very well with the whole barbecue sword and the pirate guide and all that other stuff. But they have a mask, like a Zorro mask included in that. No, you don't need a Zorro mask. Perhaps an eye patch, and then it would really fit in with the whole the pirate swag mentality. So I don't really think that it completely matches up to what they are selling over at the site, but I just thought it was awesome, so I thought I'd pass it along. It's around 15 pounds, so I guess that's like something like $85, or no, it's actually more closer to 30, I think, at this point. But yep, here you go. And then the second to last little bit of information that we have here in the caffeine and food section is a fun little article about vacuum pot brewing. Now, I have never had the chance to have coffee out of a vac pot or a siphon coffee maker, and I really spent a lot of time reading this article, and I really, really enjoy the entire thing that goes into this. This is a very, very ritual-based way of making coffee, and we've talked about vacuum pot coffee here before, and there's a couple different new and modern ways that come out, but this method of making coffee is somewhere around like 160 years old, and it's very chemist looking, and it's just one of those things where if I was able to find one of these at a flea market, I would definitely pick it up. But I don't know if I actually have the setup right now to actually have one of these in my house or convince my wife that we need yet another coffee maker. But it's just really interesting. It's all very kind of it's very kind of Victorian era style coffee making. You put all of the coffee grounds in this top glass thing, and then it sits on top of a Bunsen burner style looking thing with all the water in the bottom, and through the capillary action by heating the water, it actually draws the coffee up into the grounds and mixes around and froths it up very nicely. And then when you remove it from heat, the actual cooling of the liquid, reverse capillary action, brings it back down, and it actually is brewed coffee at that point. And depending on the style of filter that you're using to put in there, it actually looks very clear. So I'm looking at this, and this looks like a cross between the old percolator pot coffee and a Turkish coffee or a Greek coffee. So I wanted to kind of pass it along, and I really heartily recommend that if you're interested in neat and interesting ways of making coffee, that you actually check it out. All right, now the last little thing that we have here, I would like to send a huge thank you to Hank over at the Delicate Art of Noise Pollution. He helped me out of a real bind at the end of last week. I think it was Friday where I was having an unbelievable amount of stomach pain. Right after I recorded the last episode, I spent the rest of the night up in an unbelievable pain, and no amount of medication I was able to take was able to soothe my really nasty acid stomach. And I had a couple peppermint drops, and the soft peppermint candy in work, and I was going to start using them because peppermint oil is a natural way to soothe your stomach. And Hank suggested that I try green tea. You know what? The mix between green tea and the peppermint completely soothed my stomach, where Pepto-Bismol, Maalox, and any one of the other things, I even had a Zantac in me, and nothing actually worked to fix it. So if you are out there and you have somewhat of an upset stomach, you can try the green tea and peppermint solution, and hopefully that will allow you to soothe your stomach problems out. And that about wraps it up here at the Caffeination Podcast. Hopefully you've enjoyed this episode, and I knew I have a little bit of editing to do, but hopefully it won't be too much. All right, this has been Caffeination number 236, the Going Buggy Edition, and in honor of the Going Buggy Edition, if you head on over to caffeination.com, you can see one of my little fun computer bug comics that I put up there, and hopefully you'll enjoy that as well. And you can always go over to www.caffeination.com at any point in time and find out all the latest and greatest latest in tech news and caffeine culture throughout the week and whenever else you'd like to do it. This has been a proud member. We are rather a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. We're also a proud member of the Blueberry Podcast Network, and we are a Puzzle Piece production. So after all that said and done, if you find anything you'd like to comment on, and you don't want to do it under the episode, which you are more than welcome to do, so you can please email me at caffeination@gmail.com with all of your comments, feedback, suggestion, or hate mail. Thank you very much for listening, everybody, and stay caffeinated, people.